Hello, and welcome to System Mastery, the podcast that was good till about season 8, before all the stories started being sitcom-y plots about side characters and the main host switched from being angry to just dumb. As always, I am your loyal host, Jeff, and I am joined by your other loyal host, John. This week, we bring you Feng Shui, a game of carefully rearranging your furniture to achieve the principles of the Luopan compass while avoiding the poison arrows of negative energy. Or maybe it's high-concept, low-brow action-adventure set in four timelines and also some sort of super-hell. I don't know. I didn't read the book. Hopefully John did on today's System Mastery. May have noticed in that intro that I sound like the ghost of a skeleton.
Yes.
Like someone raised a skeleton from the dead and let it talk in a crackety skeleton voice, and then someone killed it and it came back as a ghost, so it was like a breathy, crackety skeleton voice.
Yeah, that's hot. That's when that cracky skeleton gets all breathy on you.
Yeah, that's what's happened to me, and that's because last night John and I did karaoke for the first time in a long time.
And when we do karaoke, we shout along with everyone else singing.
Actually, we play this stupid game all the way through every evening when we go to karaoke, which is that we try to sing other songs to the beat of whatever song the person who's on stage is trying to sing.
We're essentially just creating our own mashups as we go.
Yes, and it's pretty much the entire night. And I'm sure if you have to sit near us at a karaoke bar, it is incredibly obnoxious.
Oh, yeah. We are probably just the worst people to be sitting next to if your friend is going up to sing.
Oh, my God. Remember that time when we did that and some girl was up there doing some fucking, like, Guns N' Roses song? And she was, like, whispering through it?
Oh, yeah.
She was just like... November rain. And we were like, all right, we got to actually sing this because this is a rad song and someone should be singing it. So we did that, and then her friends got mad and tried to make us stop singing by dancing with us.
Ugh.
That was their idea. Like, if we get these two idiots to dance with us, they will stop ruining our friend's song.
Little do they know.
I'm not going to dance with them.
I do not want to dance. I only wish to ruin good times.
I only wish to ruin your thing where you come to a karaoke bar and then jump up and scream and take pictures of the person you know when they're on stage, otherwise turning your back to the stage.
Yes.
The worst kind of karaoke audience.
Yes, the karaoke audience that only cares about their friends and then immediately ignores everyone else on stage.
It really ruins your stage experience.
Yeah. It's sad.
When there's like three parties there and they're all, you're just looking at a sea of backs.
Just a bunch of people sitting there talking about work because they're all there from, like, some work party.
Yeah, or some softball tournament that just ended. And they are not going to turn around and engage you unless they dislike the song you're singing. Then they might let you know that.
Sir, I am displeased.
Yeah. And I got a lot of kind of internalized mental rules in my life at this point about karaoke etiquette.
Uh-huh. We could write a book about it.
There's a whole bunch of rules. I mean, if you think about it, let's see. Don't sign up for a song until after you sang the first song.
Yep.
If you come up to a list and see the write-up list, and there's one guy who signed up for every fifth song in the line, that guy is going to sing once. You're going to piss off the KJ.
Huh.
Let's see. There are certain songs that are simply against the rules at this point. They just can't do them anymore.
Well, I mean, but people do.
People do, but, you know, in the rules of etiquette, in the Emily Post of karaoke etiquette.
Yeah.
No more, let's see.
Sweet Caroline.
No Sweet Caroline. No Miss American Pie.
There's, if you are a lady and you want to show off, please stop doing Killing Me Softly.
Yes.
Everyone has done it. No one cares.
Yeah. And if you're an older lady, do not sing These Boots Are Made for Walking anymore. You're good. You're all set.
We're all good. Thanks. We got one.
Yeah. Let's see. I feel like we could go ahead and just issue a blanket ban on Gwen Stefani.
Well, I could.
Well, I like.
I mean,
a lot
not even just karaoke wise. I just want to have a blanket ban on Gwen Stefani.
No, Gwen Stefani.
Just make a little Gwen Stefani with a circle and a line through it, and just put that up everywhere.
Yeah. Also, that Rapper's Delight song.
Yes, because everyone thinks that's going to be so hilarious, and they're going to do that, it's 8 minutes long, and you don't care anymore.
It's a first-timer's mistake, where they're like, I'm going to pick a really long song, so I get to be up there for a long time. I'm going to get a lot of attention. And then you're at that part of the song where you're like rapping about fucking breakfast, and you're like, I'm bored, and I'm the person on stage.
Yeah, everyone else is completely tuned out, and you're like, man, I forgot that this went on forever. This is terrible.
Boy, this is still going, isn't it? Man, okay. So yeah, those are some of the just starter rules. Maybe next time we do an afterthought, we'll do a straight up list of rules for karaoke. But really, we were just here to push the agenda of that's why my voice is all shitty.
Yeah, that is true.
And John's is not, because John can just yell all day forever and not lose his voice.
Yeah, I'm like a dog that just barks forever and it's fine.
Yeah, he's magical in that regard.
Ah, yes. I mean, magical pipes.
By my third song that evening, I was basically hollowly croaking my way through it. But whatever. All right, moving on. Let's talk about feng shui.
All right. So we're going to need to move some furniture around.
I made that joke in the intro.
Nah.
I already got there.
Nah, man.
We're good. You want to do it, though? Okay. Poison arrows, the octagram of the I Ching. Okay.
There we go.
All right.
It's in the book. It does tell you a little bit about what actual feng shui is.
Right. And actual feng shui, by the way, not that Americanized, briefly popular in the early 2000s feng shui, where it was like, move your chair. You just did feng shui.
Yay.
Is it facing towards a window? Negative arrows will not hit you. That kind of nonsense that was like, that's like the Kabbalah thing. Wear a bracelet. Drink special water. You're just like Madonna.
When celebrities decide they like some stupid cultural thing that they're like, oh yeah, that's it. I want this now.
It's some smart cultural thing. It's some cool cultural thing from history. And they're like, how can I boil this down into a signature line of handbags?
Yeah, pretty much. They're like, oh, hey, how can I just take this and write, I don't know, three sentences about it and have that be a thing I do?
I'm Gwyneth Paltrow, and I'm going to tell you all about how I've adopted Sikh culture into my life. Or Sikh culture into my life. I wear this fancy $7,000 turban. Also, I named my kid Apple. Done.
We are done.
I'm so spiritual.
You guys, so spiritual, you guys.
All right, so what is feng shui actually, besides a name that reminds people of a trend?
Well, it is action movies, and it's not just standard modern day, like, Die Hard, Lethal Weapon type action movies, although it is very much also that.
It's very much also that, yes.
However, it is also much more heavily influenced by the sort of
Hong Kong cinema,
where it's like, it doesn't matter who you are, you know kung fu or probably magic, and there's a lot of the weird little like classes that are in this are just the stereotype archetypical things from any of these movies.
And it's not just Hong Kong cinema in the sense of, like, you know, the movie that, or movies that are basically modern kung fu cinema, or like Ip, Drunken Man, and so on, or the Ip Man. Also, like, battles with the hopping vampire and flying guillotine, all that kind of stuff where there's monsters and crazy magic kung fu happening.
Yeah.
That's all up in here, too.
Yeah, if you really wanted to do some kung fu hustle, you could do that very easily.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you could get away with Shaolin soccer.
Sure, you could. You can do anything you want in this game.
Yeah, try anything. Hard and believe in yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything's a dildo if you try hard and believe in yourself.
Truth. So, this has not just the modern times. The big conceit of the game is that there are four different periods in time that people can go in between.
And then also, like, a kind of hell ghost dimension that connects all of them.
Yeah, so how you get to all of these different times is you go into the nether realm, and you go find a portal to one of these other times.
I know I get lost in time every time I visit my nether realm.
Hey now.
Whoa.
Hey.
That was inappropriate.
Goodness, reel that in, man.
Although, I gotta tell you, it matches in with the fact that I have a haunted package. You see, John, I have a haunted package.
Really?
Yeah.
How so?
Well, you see, anytime the ladies see it, they go, ooh.
Excellent.
Thank you.
And scene.
Right. So let's talk about the four timelines and what they represent story-wise in the game.
Yeah. So your basic one, and probably what you'll spend your most time in, is contemporary. They don't give a year for it. It's just whatever year you're playing the game, that's what the year is.
Oh, what a coincidence. I was playing this game in 1850 AD. Shoot, there's only three timelines in this. No, okay, so yeah, there's modern day, the Lethal Weapon era, basically.
Yeah, anything that is just modern action movie, that is what the contemporary setting is.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts out with, I think, whatever the published date for this was, I think 2006.
Mm-hmm.
But the main conceit of this is every year that moves forward in any of these games, it pushes all of the other dates forward. So one of the other ones is 1850.
Yes.
But if you go ahead and say, all right, well, instead of 2006, it takes place in 2016, then it's 1860 instead of 1850 and so on.
Okay.
So that is the other one is 1850, which is much more like Victorian, and you get the feeling that they kind of wanted to go for steampunk, but they didn't really commit.
Yeah, they really didn't stick the landing on 1850. Like, there are four major settings, and of them, there's modern day, which is really obvious, Kung Fu cops, you know, like dudes who have way too many guns, superheroes, all that stuff. And then you've got the future one and the past one, which we'll get to, and they have a lot of thematic elements. 1850 just has worse guns. Done.
Yeah.
You know, they forgot. It's like they forgot to put in cool shit, which is real easy for 1850.
Oh, yeah.
And we're talking like Jules Verne era shit happening. You got,
I mean, even if you don't go the steampunk, if you just go like gunslingers, things
yeah.
like that.
The Old West, the Wild West, you've got... Like, I know it's probably about 20 to 30 years before Jules Verne books started coming out, but that's still perfectly fine for, like, Industrial Revolution stories or for, like, Journey to the Center of the Earth type stuff. I'd love to see Victorian vampires happening in here.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of cool stuff that maybe they got to in a source book, but 1850, just out the gate, felt a little shallow in the core book.
Yeah. So the other ones you get, you can go way into the past to 69 AD.
Oh, yeah.
Except now it's 79 AD.
Oh.
It's no longer sexy.
That's not. The 79 is one of the worst positions.
Right? Where someone's just, I don't know,
sticking their
on
dick
your
into
leg?
Your feet, I think. Yeah. I think they stick their dick between your feet and then they headbutt you in the back of the head. Actually, that's probably pretty good for some people.
Yeah, that's my fetish.
That's yeah, I'm going to say that's probably someone's fetish, and it's yours.
I am someone. So that one is the like ancient China one where you've got sorcerers and emperors and creatures running around that are supernatural.
You
and
got them scheming eunuchs.
And
they mention eunuchs an awful lot in this
book. Oh, yeah,
book.
Well, that's essentially who the... sorcerers are, like these eunuch sorcerers.
Yeah, because the fastest way to gain magic is to cut off that D.
Yep.
Right?
Nobody wants that.
No, no one wants your balls. You get rid of those things, all kinds of spells. Those are anti-spell balls you got dangling between your legs, gentlemen.
Yeah.
That's
it's
all.
Like, it's like two little beholders down there, and
yeah.
they've got that anti-magic vision.
Yeah, if you're in the Star Wars universe, what you've got in your sack is two curled-up Isalamiris. That's what's up in there.
Wow.
Someone's going to send me an email about how the plural is Isalamiri and that the singular is Isalamir. I know. Okay? You heard me. I said it.
It happened. It's fine.
Everything's okay. Move along.
So, yeah, that is much more like the fantasy setting of this. You get weird supernatural stuff and
brawny muscle dudes and
yeah,
cause
guys
it's not
with
just
swords
China.
And yeah. shenanigans.
It doesn't have to be just China. If you want to make a Conan, for example, that's kind of the area you want them to come from.
And then the far future where it's the year like 2056.
I remember it was 2056 because it was the only one that fit into binary or compounding number theory. I really wanted the one in the 1800s to match that, but it didn't.
Oh.
That's okay. We'll move on. So 2056, the near future.
And in there, we have the sort of cyberpunk. You've got, like, corporations that are in charge of things,
yeah,
and it's a police state.
There's one huge corporation, which at first you think has a cool kind of, like, Japanese, like, salary punk sort of name. It's called Bureau. And then you realize it's just Bureau.
Yeah, it's just Bureau.
It's the Bureau, but spelled funny. And they make a bunch of fancy guns. And then the other part of what's in the far future is that scientists kind of figured out magic, and they harnessed it into technology.
Yeah, so you get some Arcano Weave things.
Yeah, Arcano Wave gear, which is mostly like techno horror goop. It's like, you make a gun, and it's made out of bones, and it's full of green stuff, and it shoots an ooze.
Yeah, well, I know my bone gun shoots an ooze, if you know what I mean.
This is a gross episode. What's happening here?
Man, we are real gross right now. It's probably because we're all sweaty.
Well, also, yes. We're in the same giant heat wave that the rest of the country is in.
Yeah, sorry the rest of the country we live in.
There are other people getting it worse. We're at San Diego, normally pretty hot, but right now that big bubble of heat is kind of over the Midwest.
Oh, yeah. We're complaining about it because it's up in the high 70s.
We're like, oh, no.
My God, you guys, I might have to wear shorts instead of pants.
It's like 8 degrees hotter than standard room temperature.
Come on, you guys. I have to turn a fan on.
Oh, I might have to turn on two fans. Suck it, Arizona. All right. So yeah, that's 2056. The technology is basically like Event Horizon technology, where you can't not watch it and go, why didn't they just put spikes all over everything?
No, we need more spikes.
Everything spikes. Spikes, what? Can you tell me, is that a load-bearing skull in this spaceship? Is that what that is? Oh, yeah. You need them skulls.
Well, yeah, obviously. Yeah.
If you don't have skulls, where are you going to put in the LED eyeball lights?
Come on, we need these spine columns.
Yeah, you need columns of spines. I need a giant rotating, contra-rotating spike ball. You can't have space travel without giant contra-rotating spike balls. Also, every time a door opens or closes, it should be the scariest fucking noise in the world.
Yeah, it doesn't actually make any noise. We just put a little noisemaker on there to do that.
There's a little speaker. What was that? Door opening. It doesn't always sound like that. Oh, no, there's like 50 sounds. All of them are messed up. Sometimes it's a wet sklurch.
Oh, hold on. Let me change it. I got this new DLC I can put on there. Now the door opens and just goes, meow.
Nothing scarier than a slightly attentive cat.
Yeah. Door opens. Hey!
I feel like we're trotting into Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy territory here with the doors that we're happy to open. Every time they opened.
Yeah.
That was a great point in that book. Anyway, moving on. I don't want to steal from that. So yeah, those are the four time periods, and then there's a sort of ghosty hell dimension that connects them all that's just called the Netherworld.
Yeah, and there are some like ghosts and shenanigans going on in there. A
couple of ghosts and goblins.
Yeah. A guy in a suit of armor, he throws like lances at
lots
you.
Lots of lances. Like, I know he was getting all those lances.
That's weird.
Yeah, and then he kind of gets hit by a ghost, and now he's in his underwear.
Yep. Anyway, weird. It's weird down there.
So there's ghosts and goblins and ghouls and ghosts down there. There's lots of those.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So the Nether Realm is sort of shaped by your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going through like endless hallways and you're like, oh, I'm from 2056 and I'm used to like sterile chrome hallways everywhere because that's what we do in the future, then the shape of the Nether Realm will sort of turn into that.
Okay. So, like, for example, in your case, the entire Netherrealm would be shaped like a Mama Celeste microwave pizza.
Do you think I live inside of a Mama Celeste pizza? Is that what you're saying right now? I'm used to my walls being Mama Celeste pizzas. Am I that baller that I've just decided to turn my walls into pizza? That's what I've done.
I think exude out from. I think that just
do I have a load-bearing pizza? That's what I need to ask you right now.
I'm sure there
in
are
this world you have constructed about where I live.
I'm pretty sure that since you still have the internet, there's probably a few pizzas in your room that do bear a load. Yes.
It's poop joke.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, yeah. They bear a load.
Nope. That wasn't a poop joke. It was way grosser. I don't know what on the internet is going to make you poop, but okay.
No, it's poop socking.
Okay, fair enough. Fine.
Yeah. We are just as gross as possible today.
Pooping on Mama Celeste pizzas. Feng shui, everybody.
There you go. That's how you improve the energy.
All right. Why don't we talk about the mechanics of this game?
No.
I mean, God, it's only been 18 minutes. We probably should at least a little at some point.
Meh.
All right, so your character has some stats.
Okay, so that's it.
Done.
We are done with the mechanics. So the basic stats you have all have substats as well.
Yeah.
So your main one is body,
mm-hmm.
and that's, you know, just like it says on the tin.
Yeah, it's sort of your generic strength athletics sort of combo stat, but it splits down into the stats you'd probably recognize more efficiently.
So you get your move, mm-hmm. your strength, your constitution, and your toughness.
Yes. Now, let's see. There are a couple of things in there that sound samey. First of all, move is directly your ability to move. It is speed, basically.
Yeah. It's just running around.
There's also an agility or dexterity or something stat further down the line.
And there is also a speed stat.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So move is your movement.
Movement. Speed is the
how fast you are.
It's your
in
initiative.
Combat. Yeah.
And then agility is your gunslingy sort of thing.
Yeah. But we will get to that.
Yes.
We're getting ahead of yourself.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I don't mean to. Let's see. That means we also have to deal with the difference between toughness and constitution.
Yeah.
Toughness is straight up damage absorption.
Yeah, toughness is just if you get punched, you subtract toughness from it, and then that's the damage you'll take.
Yeah.
So constitution, however, is your ability to, you know, get over poison or your ability to not, like, get susceptible to weird effects. So any of that goes under constitution. And then strength just is how much you can lift and how much damage you do up close.
And then what else was in there? There was strength, okay, which is obvious.
Yeah, and then strength. So, yeah. Then the way that stats work, before we move on to the other ones, is you're going to have a number for your main stat. So your body will be a number. That is your main stat for that. So when you start out, if I have, let's say, a 5 in body, all of my substats are 5.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So you don't... And then you can kind of fiddle with them by raising one or lowering another, but not really. You'd think that that's how it would work. You'd be like, all right, I have a body of 5, so I'll take a 6 strength and a 4 toughness. But really, it's all informed by the classes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So everything, all your stats, all that is just going to be what class you pick.
So are you saying that my body is a number, man?
No. No, oh,
okay.
I'm not.
Okay, I was just checking to see if you were.
I do think you have a number, Wang, though. God. Yeah, that's some Mitchell and Webb for you.
Motherfucker. Oh.
That's number, Wang.
That's what I get for telling the really, really bad joke.
That is.
Isn't it?
That is
like,
what you get.
That's like a punishment is I have to listen to Mitchell and Webb stuff.
That is exactly what you get.
All right, fair enough.
All right, so the next main stat you get is your ki.
Okay.
And that is just your general, spiritual energy.
Yes, and it divides up into the various types of magical shtickery that this book has in it.
Yeah, so you can have fortune, which is straight up just your luck.
It's a luck stat, and it's straight up works by letting you re-roll dice.
Well, you get fortune dice that you get to add on.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. So you add on, not that you re-roll. You're right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then there's kung fu, and kung fu is just your ability to kung fu people.
Yeah, you can kung fu them up real good.
And then there's magic, which is your ability to cast magic.
Yep, so those are your 3 stats that are in that. Fortune, which is straight up your luck stat, magicking people, and kung-fuing at people.
Yeah. Now, most people in the book end up having sort of a low ki rating, but they'll, if there's something like, oh, I'm the gambler for the class, they'll have like a ki of 1, but their fortune will be 8.
Yeah, same thing for the all-American everyman. They have like a fortune.
Yeah,
of
they
10.
Have a super high fortune.
Yeah, but that's it. They have no magical ability, no kung fu ability, but they're crazy lucky.
Yeah. So you'll see that a lot for like if you're an ancient kung fu master,
so
your ki won't be higher than say 2, but your kung fu will be an 8.
Right. So where body and the other ones work by sort of being like, all right, you have a baseline stat which informs the rest of them.
Well, ki they is, all do that.
Yeah,
it's just
ki's more catch on. It has that same rule, but almost none of the classes follow it. You never see one that has a ki of 8 and also has magic, kung fu, and fortune of 8.
No. Most of the time, I think maybe the wizard or something has the ability to have, they start with a high ki, but even then, it's not a lot.
Yeah,
they just start with a higher magic.
They go, you have a ki of 8 and a high magic, but you don't have kung fu. It almost always works that way. I think there's a few of them that are kind of catch-all classes that have like a ki of 5 and then 5s and all those other things.
But very rarely.
Yeah, out of like the 20 or so classes in the game, that happens like once.
So the next thing you get is your mind stats. So that's going to give you your charisma, your intelligence, your perception, and your willpower, which are all just essentially what they would think you'd be.
You've played White Wolf. You know what every one of those stats is.
Yeah, I mean, if you've ever played any game, you'll know. Hell, if you haven't ever played a role-playing game in your life, and I tell you, this stat is your intelligence, I'm almost certain you'll guess what it does.
Is it how strong I am?
It is. Obviously, you have a low strength.
You're so mean.
I know, right?
Oh, okay.
So the last one is reflexes.
Yeah.
And that is your agility, dexterity, and speed. Agility is your hand-to-hand combat. And that's going to be your gymnastic skill. You're jumping around. You're doing stuff. And then you're hitting people close up.
Yep.
Then dexterity is more manual dexterity, so hand-eye coordination, which includes shooting guns.
Yeah, and primarily is shooting guns. It is basically only shooting guns.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you've got, like, lockpicking or bomb disposal or whatever, it'll use manual dexterity.
Fair enough.
But most of the time, it's just going to be shooting guns.
I have a hard time imagining a scenario in this particular game where lockpicking is going to come up. I feel it's about, there's a big locked door there. I shoot the lock off because I'm a gunman. I have
gunsman.
I'm a gunsman of many guns.
Yeah, but you might be the scrappy kid archetype, and then you're like, oh, I can pick this lock.
I guess, yeah. But even then, you'd be like, well, am I the only one here? Because every single other person has a way to get rid of that lock that's faster.
Yeah, but maybe it makes a lot of noise, and you want to get in there quietly.
I guess.
Because there's an evil sorcerer, and if you wake him up, he's going to kill you.
Oh, yeah. So we got a game of Don't Wake Sorcerer happening.
Oh, man, I love that game. I remember back in the 80s when I would play Don't Wake Sorcerer.
Yeah. If you wake up the sorcerer, he'll turn you into a toad. No, you got to roll a little die and see if you accidentally wake the sorcerer.
Oh.
All right, moving on.
And then speed. And speed is your ability to react to things quickly. So and not your movement, like we mentioned, but just your reaction time.
So, I hate to say this, because Feng Shui is a rad game for smart people to play and is awesome, but speed breaks the action economy immediately.
So the way initiative works in this game and how your actions work is every action you do
has an equal
and opposite number of shots that it takes to use.
Exactly.
So shots are, if you've ever played Exalted and know about the tick system from the second edition and so on.
Hey, you pour a little gasoline on them and then you can slide them off. Or you can pinch them and pull them away so that only their head is stuck in you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it when only their head is stuck in me.
Gross. Why? All day today.
All day. Every day. So gross.
It's the tick system, you know, where a bad man
hits
yell a
spoon.
Yeah, where a bad man hits a dog with street.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the system is if you do an action, most of the time your standard, like make an attack, whatever, your normal, complicated but not crazy action is three shots.
Yes.
And then you can do, if you're doing magic, you might have a spell that takes a lot of them.
Yeah, you can also make your shot happen faster by doing what's called a snap shot, where you make your action harder to accomplish in exchange for it happening in two shots instead of three, so you can go sooner.
And then everyone has their baseline passive defense that you have to beat in order to hit someone,
mm-hmm.
but for one shot, you can make an active defense, and then it adds a bonus onto your defense for whatever that attack against you is.
Correct, yeah.
Now, the number of shots in a round is not standard. Normally, it'd be like, oh, a round is, you know, 6 seconds, and there are six actions you can take in a round or whatever. In this one, everyone rolls a d6, adds it onto their speed, and that is how many ticks up you have.
Uh-huh.
So whoever rolled the highest, that's what your baseline is.
Yeah.
So if everyone rolled and the person who rolled highest got an 11, you have 11 shots to use in that.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever you rolled, so if they rolled an 11 and I rolled a 7, once it rolls down to 7 in the countdown, then I get to go.
Right.
So if someone were to have a speed of, say, 12 and rolled a 6 and they have 18 and they're just amazing,
mm-hmm.
and you have a speed of 4 and you roll a 2 and you have 6, they're going to go like 4 times before you get to do anything.
That is correct, yes. So that means it's a bad idea in this game to build a big slow bruiser type.
Yeah, unfortunately, the damage that you deal isn't super necessary with being like, oh, if you have a high strength, you know, that's how you're going to kill people. Because, honestly, you can just shoot them and do a decent amount of damage anyway.
You can do the gun's worth of damage, as opposed to, you know, just hit. There's no advantage in this game to hitting someone with a hammer over just shooting them.
Yeah.
Which is fine, it's realistic, it makes sense for action movies, but it does mean that a whole archetype of characters in this game aren't quite as efficient as other ones, and for very little gain.
The main problem is reflexes covers not only your ability to hit, but also how many actions you get, which makes it the stat.
Yeah.
It is the thing that if you're making a character and it says, hey, you can add 3 to any one of your like main stats, you put it into reflexes. It doesn't matter.
Yes. And so basically what he's talking about there is that the next thing you do in this game is you pick classes.
Yeah.
You know, before we get into that, you're right. This game has a little problem with action economy breaking. It's very easy to build a fast character that gets to go a lot of times before anyone else gets to go, which isn't necessarily, it's not like the game has PvP built into it, so it just means you're going to kill a lot of thugs.
Well, it also means that if I'm going 6 times and the other guy at the table is going 2, he gets to sit there while I jerk off.
Fair enough.
Which is my favorite thing to do at the table.
Yeah, just make everyone so nerd social fallacy, you guys. Try and stop me.
Quack, 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 quack. Quack, 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 quack.
I really
quack.
Want to
Why
stop.
Why does it sound like Pac-Man when I jerk off? Quack, 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 quack.
That's your fault for eating so many pretzels and cherries.
That's what happens. Let it be known, kids. Don't eat too many pretzels and cherries, or it sounds like Pac-Man when you jerk it.
Dude,
these are words of wisdom from System Mastery.
You're talking to kids. They have no idea what any of that is. Like, Pac-Man?
The packed man?
He sounds like a well-packed man.
That British packing gentleman?
The packing gentleman of Britain.
The Pac-Man of many nations?
He's shaped like one of your Canadian Hockington pucks.
Oh, yes.
Oh, goodness. Okay, so yeah, it's got a little problem with action economy, but it's not a huge emergency. Most people are just going to build for the shot system, and it's fine.
So, yeah, that is how that ends up working out. So, normally, if, you know, you don't have someone that has skewed ridiculously in there...
It'll be fine.
It'll be fine. And the nice thing is that active defense that I mentioned will just take you down one tick from wherever you are, no matter what it is.
Yeah.
So if I had, say, a 7 on my shots, then someone tries to shoot me, and I don't want to get hit. I just go down to 6 and get my passive.
And you still have two full shots you can be taking.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty functional system. Now, like I was mentioning a minute ago, what you do to build characters in this game is, what's the average human stat value? It's like a 4 or 2 or something like that?
Yeah, it's like, if you're an average human, you've probably got a 2 or a 3 in a stat.
Right. So most characters start with like 5s and everything. Unless they're
because you are a badass human.
Yeah, you're a badass crazy soup or something or other. Because you're not necessarily a human.
Oh, that is true.
Yeah. So you're a badass crazy thing. So you get to have superhero-y stats right from the very start. And the way that this game works is there's no dice you have to roll when you're making a character. Instead, you are required to pick from one of about 20 kind of badass archetypes. And they will give you a starting stat array and then some bonuses you can put on either primary or secondary stats.
Yeah. And the way that all of this works is not only does it do that, but some of them have prerequisites for like what time period you have to be from. So if you're playing as an Abomination, which is in 2056, they are sending back monster hunters to 69 AD to catch monsters so they can cybernetic them up and then turn them into like horrible like enforcers for
them. They call them Abominations.
So these Abominations
are the very first thing in the list of classes you can play, which is really weird when you're like, all right, let's see what your superhero archetypes are, your badass like
action movie
gunfighter archetypes are. And it's like, oh, a cybernetic gargoyle. Okay, yeah, that's
well,
I've seen that in a lot of movies.
Yeah, it's the addition of all of the different time periods are interesting. But it makes it so that you're going through with a certain idea in mind, and then it just keeps veering wildly off target.
Yeah. Well, some of them are very specific to the time period they're from. Like, Abomination is, this could only come out of 2056, this is a very specific type of thing. But then you've got one that's like Gunslinger, and you're like, what could this be? Well, it could be a future tech, like, cybernetic robo-raider, it could be a cowboy. Some of them are more generic than others.
Yeah, but I mean, like, some are, like, one of them is a ghost. You are playing as an actual for reals ghost.
Yeah.
And you are only allowed to be a ghost if you are from 69 AD or just from the netherworld.
Right. And they are a very Chinese ghost.
Yes.
In terms of what you're looking at, like, the kind of ghost that has a little piece of yellow paper stapled to its head.
You're looking at the kind of ghost that is, I don't know, going to be a blue little kid and it's going to meow at you. Oh, wait, no, wrong type of ghost.
No, those are Japanese ghosts.
Yeah.
That's the kind of ghost that hangs out in your shower and comes out of the back of your hair.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Does that jitters skitter walk down some stairs backwards? Comes out of your TV. Yeah. No, those aren't ghosts you want. We're talking about Chinese ghosts where they like have a yellow prayer strip stapled to them and they hop everywhere.
Oh, those are vampires.
No, they also were vampires.
Everybody hops.
Everybody hops but you.
So
there's about 20 of these, and a lot of them are what you'd expect. Karate cop.
Oh, yeah, and you can get a magic cop and things like that. And even though, like, you might think cop, okay, well, that's only going to be, say, like, modern or, like, the future or whatever. You can be just, like, a constable or you can be...
The town guard,
whatever.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, you can be anything.
By the way, there are skills in this game. That's another thing you get to pick. You buy them in ranks just like everything else in the game, and they are very, very simple and broad.
But you do get just assigned them to start.
Yeah,
so whatever it is that you play as, so if you're like, oh, I'm playing as a monster hunter from the future, they're like, great, you can get the ability to shoot some guns, and you've got martial arts, and you have info about ancient China because you're going into the past to capture guys.
I gotta be honest, I really like that. I like the way that the skill system works by saying every skill gives you an ability, knowledge, and contacts.
Oh, yeah. So, well, like, that's a thing we should mention then.
Yeah.
The skills aren't just, like, if I have, say, guns.
Yeah.
It's not just, oh, I have the gun skill, it means I shoot guns. It does mean that.
It also means that.
But it also means I have info about guns. I'm a gun guy, so I can be like, oh, you see that? Well, that's actually a gun that was only manufactured for 4 years, and they stopped making it because the safety would always slip off, and then you can ramble off some shenanigans, and if you can convince your GM that what you know is rad and you can do a thing, then he might give you a bonus to whatever or something like that.
And then furthermore, you also have contacts. Because you're such a gun guy, you've come to know other gun guys throughout, like, your course of travels and circle of friends, so that whenever you're in need of a gun, you can almost always know the right person to call.
Yeah, you're like, I know guys who do, like, the back of the car gun sales. I know guys who always have, like, extra scopes and clips or whatnot.
I know a bunch of creepy libertarians who wear shirts that say things like, taxes are revolting, why aren't you? And they totally sell me all the parts I need to make Glock automatic while giggling about how the government can't do anything about it. I know lots of those guys.
So many.
What I'm saying is, I know assholes. And I don't even have the asshole skill. I mean, I do.
I mean, come on now.
I did want to briefly touch on the seduction skill in this game.
Yes.
If I may. This game's seduction skill does not have the... this skill can be used to seduce a member of the opposite sex, straight up wording. What it has instead is kind of the reverse of that, which is that it describes a failure state of, this will not work if the person you're trying to seduce is not interested in your gender.
Yeah.
Which sounds okay, but does have some kind of secondary issues that arise from it. It indicates that the only thing in the world that you could possibly need to seduce someone, the only criteria based on whether or not you could seduce someone, is if you are of the correct genitals. And that's it. It's like, it's not like, well, I'm a morbidly fat guy and I had to roll in here just sideways. I had to be pushed in here by Oompa Loompas, but I'm going to fucking get you in bed. Even though that's not your shit. But I got a dick, though. I got a fucking dick. Look, there it is. There, proof. Dick.
So yeah, well, except in this game, big fat guy rolled into the room by Oompa Loompas is not an archetype, oddly enough. That's not a thing you can play.
Don't you tell me. There's two different types of supernatural monsters in this game.
Yes, and they specifically have, like, a zero in charisma.
I'm just saying, it's closer. It's closer. I'm still dreaming of the world where the seduction skill says, seduction, use this to seduce people, and then just moves along.
Yeah, but that's what it says. In your world, it's the exact same thing of the giant guy rolled in by Oompa Loompas does that, except now he can seduce anyone.
He can.
He goes in and...
if he makes a high enough skill roll, he can. If I make a high enough skill roll, I should be able to seduce a straight dude. That's what I'm saying. Right now, that skill works if I want to seduce a corpse, provided that is the corpse of a straight woman. All I'm saying is, this skill can be used to seduce people. If it should be difficult, the DM will fucking figure it out. That's all I want. Anyway, it's better than most.
Yes.
It's better than most, and that's good enough.
Good enough.
Yeah, right now, that skill would work on a kangaroo if it was a girl.
Yeah, well, I mean, that doesn't take much. Kangaroos are known sluts.
Kangaroos, known sluts.
Whores of the outback, they're known.
I think we just got our new shirt. It's going to go right up next to the Donkey Talk shirt.
Yeah, right next to it.
Yeah. By the way, is this an episode of Donkey Talk? Gonna ride that donkey,
donkey down to the home. No, it isn't.
Okay, moving on. Damn, I really wanted to work in it. All right, so those are the way the class work. They show you the four skills, and then they give you bonuses you can put into each one to make them a little more.
So the last thing you get, though, when you're making your character, is going to be the powers slash feats system in this, which is called shticks. And you may remember shticks from the Floating Vagabond.
Yeah, Floating Vagabond has them. So does Toon, which we haven't covered yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But instead of being like, oh, you always have a banana cream pie and you can hit people with it, Your shtick is just you know how to do certain things.
It's a catch-all word that would normally be feat or skill effect in other games.
Yeah.
So for example, a shtick in this game could be very wide-ranging. It could be things like you know how to shoot your guns faster, or you know how to cast missile spells, or let's see, you know how to use this crazy future super hypodermic gun. So it's a bunch of different stuff. We should probably talk about some of the more interesting core archetype groupings. So, for example, there are a whole bunch that are just humans with a power. Like wizards, they get access to the sorcery shticks. They get a high magic score. Gunmans get a lot of gun shticks and a lot of weapons they get to carry around. But there are a few that are particularly interesting. We already talked about monsters, and they come in three flavors. Cybernetic monsters.
You regular get your abomination.
Yeah. Regular type monsters.
Yeah.
And ghosts.
And then you get the weird one, which is a human that is a transmutated animal.
Yes, the transformed animal, which is not a furry. Let's get that out of the way.
No, they're actually a dude.
They're just regular people who look like you and me, except way cooler. And
yeah, somebody bibbity-bobbity-booed that donkey into being a coachman.
Are you sure this isn't an episode of Donkey Talk?
No, I'm pretty sure.
Damn it.
I'm almost certain of it.
Ah. Can we at least work in like a Cheese Dudes commercial or a hot dog question?
No, none of it. None of the old jokes. I'm only looking forward to the future.
I'm not letting Donkey Talk die. I've been working on the t-shirt design for a couple of days now. All right, so transformed animal is things like, I have the soul of a crab, but I'm just a guy now.
Yeah, it's like some wizard came up and he turned a crab into a dude because he needed some guy to do a thing for him, and then he just left him because wizards have no sense of right and wrong.
That is straight up the reason, because you know what's not hard to get to do a thing for you is some guy.
Yeah.
There's lots of those. That's an endlessly renewable resource is some guy.
Yeah, you're just out in the forest and a bear comes upon you and you're like, oh, I'm going to turn that bear into a dude and then tell that bear to go get me something.
Otherwise, I could have just had the mini dudes who work for me because I'm a rad wizard go get me something. But you know, I wanted a bear to do it.
Yeah, because I wanted to show all the dudes who work for me that I can turn a bear into a guy, and if I want to, I could turn a guy into a bear.
Well, as far as they know, I didn't see any rules for that.
Yeah.
I mean, you can turn that guy you turned into a bear.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you turned into a bear.
Into a bear guy.
Oddly, that's surprisingly easy and is another one of the weird weak points built into this game, is that being a transformed animal comes with a really cool set of little shticks and powers that character can pick. Like,
you pick from whatever the animal you came from was.
So, for example, if you're like, oh, I have the soul of an elephant, you have things like, I have trample and herd, where all the other transformed animals get a bonus based on how many other transformed animals there are in this party. And again, these all just look like dudes. It's not like you're playing as the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles here.
Yeah, you are just a guy.
Yeah.
But maybe you'll have, like, some weird tell. So, you know, you can always have, like, oh, I'm a girl and I used to be a cat. Well, I've got those cat ears.
Yeah, I guess you could give them the Nakome cat ear type situation. Or the picture of them, the art in this book, is a rad samurai with a rooster shadow.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a neat tell you could have. Anyway, yeah, so they get these cool little sets of bonuses, but then they have constant risks of being hit by magic, and any magic they get hit with, or any time they're denied a certain level of magic in the atmosphere, or exposed to too much, I forget which one it is, they have a risk of just turning back into an animal permanently, which they don't want to do.
Yeah, because they're like, well, I'm a cool dude, and I don't want to go back to being a chicken, so nope. However, under the mage shticks that you can get, there is straight up just a spell you can do that the only thing it does for you is, oh, you go up to a transformed animal and turn him back into an animal. So, screw you, buddy.
Yeah, it's weird that weakness is. There's a couple of these neat shtick groupings that have unexplained weaknesses that seem way more thematic than they do balance-derived.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the book goes out of its way to be like, don't worry about balance. This is a weird, like, super kung fu thing. But you have an entire class that you can pick that can just be insta-killed by a spell. Mm-hmm. It's not like anyone else goes, oh yeah, Maverick Cop. I have a spell that turns Maverick Cops into a rock.
That would be a pretty cool spell. And then you have the same weird little issue when it comes to the future tech. Because the future tech has to, there's a whole bunch of restrictions to using it. First of all, it's all based on cybernetic implantation, which they call AIO ports.
Yeah, you have a little port in your body that you stick one of these, like, techno-magic whatevers into you.
Right, and you have a certain number of those ports, and those ports cost XP and money. And then also the shticks to use the guns and equipment cost XP and money. and then the or XP, and then the guns themselves cost money. So it's a very expensive class in terms of XP and gear to get your hands on, and the end result isn't that much better than a gun. It does almost the same damage. Sometimes it has an extra cool rider. But what you're paying for instead is you have to make these constant checks to not mutate into a gross monster that eventually you can become a gross enough monster that you have to have your character taken away from you by the DM.
Yeah.
So so basically, every time you get to use your cool like future gun, which is always something, it's like a gross mass of pustulating tentacles and bones shoots a screaming glot of goo. It's always just gross shit.
Yeah.
You have to roll this chance that your character will mutate. There's even a little sidebar that's like, why would anyone pick this? And the sidebar goes out of its way to explain to you that, oh, don't worry about it. You can pick it. Those difficulty rolls to not mutate are really low. Usually you won't have to worry about it. I'm like, okay, if they're so low you don't have to worry about them, take them out of the game.
So the weird things for a couple different classes are there. And the last weird thing for classes are anyone who's casting spells.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a sorcerer or wizard or whatever, and you're probably going to be from 69 AD.
Probably.
And the reason that is one, all of those classes are generally restricted to either that or the Nether Realm or whatever. But as well, there is a bonus or penalty to using magic depending on what timeline you're in. So if you're in 69 AD, you get +2 to any rolls that you do with magic.
Yes, however, it's very magical back then.
Yeah, if you go to pretty much any other timeline, it's basically awful. So if you go to 1850 or contemporary, it's -2 to anything you do. If you go to the future, they're kind of doing magic stuff, so it's a +1.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to the Nether Realm, it's +0.
Right. So wizards get consistently worse for the most part in any timeline other than 69 AD, which is weird. It doesn't seem necessary. Like, when I was first getting ready to read this game, I was like, all right, let's get into it. Crazy action adventure. It's going to be one of those games that's supposed to be about the rules getting out of your way. Oh, there's a fiddly magic penalty based on what time stream I'm in? Why? That seems highly unnecessary. Especially since it's one of those games where your characters are supposed to be like crazy success stories all the time.
Well, yeah. I mean, if I want to be fucking David Lopan and I want to be in the contemporary world and just being a weird wizard,
yeah,
I should be able to do that.
The other thing is that the wizards, to me, even more so than the Arcana Wave guys with their goop guns from the future, the wizards feel like a lot of their spells and stuff are strictly for evil. Like, they're just like, this is a bad guy thing that no PC would have time or interest in.
Well, not a lot.
Well,
there's
okay.
A couple examples.
I would say there are two major examples.
Yeah.
The first one would be summoning. And you can tell summoning is very heavily hindered in order not to break the action advantage even further by letting you just always have a buddy around. It always works on demons. And in order to get a demon, you have to get the summoning shtick, which includes all four summoning spells. But to get a demon into play that matters, you need two of those spells. First, you need to summon a demon, and then you need to cast a separate spell to control it. If you fail at either, a demon shows up anyway and attacks the shit out of you.
Yep.
So there's two huge chances to fail and have a demon attack you. It takes a really long time to do it, and it's better if you do it as a big old ritual, which means who's going to use this? Villains who are at the end of dungeons.
Yeah.
It's just for them, and if it's just for them, does it really need to be a set of rules in the game?
Well, the problem is, summoning the way it is in the book is something you have already done off screen.
Exactly. If those rules are in place, it's like, this is something you did a while ago. Why are they rules? Why isn't it just, hey, sometimes when you show up to fight an evil sorcerer at the end of a dungeon, he'll have a demon with him.
That, or if you're a player, you go, oh, if you took the summoning shtick, you just have a pet demon.
Yeah, you have that World of Warcraft warlock thing where there's
and
just a demon around.
Yeah, and then you just have a few powers about like, oh, you can summon a tool, or you can teleport to a thing, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not complaining. Again, I think this game is awesome. There's a lot about this game to like. It's just there are a few weird little issues.
Yeah, the other one is
the immortality spell.
Well, there's immortality spell. The big one for me, which is specifically it calls out as being for villains, is Blast.
Oh, yeah.
Blast, it has a bunch of different shticks.
Yeah.
And so you choose one to do.
Blast.
Normally, you get all of the shticks in something.
Yeah. I mean, we should talk about how Blast is legitimately an awesome spell normally. It's just shoot energy, and it comes in a variety of cool methods, and you get a whole bunch of cool stunts and feed off of it. It's great. It's exactly what you want from an action-adventure wizard.
Yeah. So normally, when you get a magic shtick, if I get, say, weather control, it has a ton of different things under weather control, and I get all of them.
Yes.
So I don't have to go, oh, I picked weather control, but now I have to only be able to make it rain. Dollar bills. But if I get blast, all I do is pick one of the shticks from the blast category, which can be things like I shoot acid, which can burn through like different things, so I can try and like open locks or get serial numbers off of stuff in addition to shooting damage.
Mm-hmm.
Or I could pick fire, which is sort of the standard fireball. I can light things, so I can also use it to like light a cigarette or a candle just as much as anything else.
It mentioned that frost, for example, could be used to cover a windshield in ice so that you can make a car crash.
Yeah, so it's got the blast effect of whatever the shtick you pick, you can do for lesser effects or special effects, things like that. Now, one of them, though, is specifically a blast that is just disease. So you go, all right, I shoot a guy and he gets real sick. And now he's like -2 to all of his rolls.
Yeah.
Okay. What does that do? Oh, nothing. If you're a PC, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, but you just made a mook sick. Who cares?
Yeah. But if you're a villain, you're like, oh, yeah, I zap that guy and then I run away and now he's all messed up. Well, okay, sure. That's a thing where you're like, well, now we've got to go find a cure for this weird magic disease that you have. It's a hook for your players, but to have it be an option for your players, it specifically says in the book, this is probably something that just the like the NPCs are going to be doing.
And it's one of two that work that way in the blast system. The other one is transform as a blast, which is where you blast someone with just transformative energy and turn him into goop or clay or something. And it specifically notes that healing from this is really hard, it's very painful, and it's super evil to use this. And it has no other effect. It has no stunting effect. It's just straight up, here, this is a version of blast you can use if you want to be a mean dick.
Oh, yeah, or if you want to be Willow.
Yeah,
I'm just going to turn someone into stone.
Yeah, like fair enough. That's basically what it is. So the other one that's fun to talk about in the wizard spells that's a little lacking is immortality.
Yeah, that's not so much that it's like, oh, this is so evil or whatever. It's just bad.
It's just a failure of design is all it is. It's funny. It's a very hard spell to cast. The difficulty of it is the age of the person you're trying to render immortal divided by 4. And what it does is each time you succeed at the spell, they become 1 year younger and they lose 1 point of their magic stat.
Yeah, so magic was the substat under key.
Let's keep in mind that the base human is about a 2, the max human is about a 10. Your character, if they are of an unusual magical build, can exceed that 10.
Yeah, but even then, like I think the highest you get as a starting character would be, say, 8.
Right.
Now, at that point, you go, oh, man, you could make yourself with 8 different roles and sacrificing all of your ability to use magic 8 years younger.
Yeah.
That's going to matter when I go from 80 to 72.
Right. Or you could keep yourself at the age of 70 for 8 years if you wanted. And in exchange, you need to continually have new wizards coming in to cast a spell on you, and you need to spend all your XP all the time on getting more magic so that you can lose it to keep staying the same age.
Yeah, it...
with a huge chance of failing.
Yeah, the problem with this is, as well, if the wizard casting it fails, if he has a backlash, then...
Oh, you become as old as you are every time
you've
cast this.
It strips all of the reverse aging. So if you were 80 and you've been 80 for the past, like, 12 years because you just keep doing that, all of a sudden you revert to 92.
Which is a cool way to kill an immortal villain. The problem is, again, this is useless for a PC, because no PC game of this is going to last, you know, 50 years, and it's going to matter that your character is younger than everyone else. That's not going to happen.
No.
So this
and there's no rules for getting worse as you age.
Yeah.
So if my guy is the archetype of the old master, Kung Fu guy, I am just as badass as a 70-year-old as you are as a Kung Fu cop is like a 25-year-old.
Right. So if this is just for NPCs, then why all the rigmarole? Wouldn't it be just as efficient to say, oh yeah, there's a villain in here and he's a crazy kung fu master who's been 15 for 300 years, and just make it awesome instead of being like, oh yeah, he's been 70 for 5 years and there's a chance every year that he fucks up and kills himself. Isn't that a great villain?
Yay.
It's neat. It's a cool set of rules. It just strikes me as unnecessary for the purposes of what this game wants, which is to set up a really cool movie.
Yeah. Now, we didn't quite get into it when we were talking about the timelines, but the main sort of overarching plot, which you don't have to get into, you could just do a regular, like, Hong Kong shoot 'em up if you want to, but the main meta plot of this is there are feng shui sites in the world.
Mm-hmm.
They are places of power, and they collect ki energy, and if you control it and are attuned to it, you get bonuses.
Right.
Most of the time for player characters, if they get attuned to it, it actually gives you an XP bonus as a group.
Yes, and it's kind of cool. And, you know, a lot of this game is taking over feng shui sites from other people, using them to travel through time to try and control more feng shui sites. It's a neat hook.
Well, that's essentially the invisible war that is going on in the background, is mm-hmm. each time period has a group that is mostly just villains that are trying to control all of that timeline's feng shui sites, as well as every other time periods.
Yeah.
Because if you control all of the power sites in any given timeline, you control what it looks like. So that's why these wizards that control the all the feng shui sites in 69 AD means that there's all of this magic and everything is super mystical and whatnot, because they want it to be that way.
Right. Okay, so John, we have maybe 15 minutes left in this episode. If we're being charitable and we run super long, I feel like we maybe, just a little bit, at some point in this episode should discuss how you roll dice in this game.
Meh. Okay, so it has an interesting dice mechanic to it. How you resolve things is you roll 2d6.
Yeah, and you designate them before you roll. So
you're going to want to have two different colors,
yeah,
because one is going to be your positive die and one is going to be your negative die. When you roll, you take the positive die and subtract the roll of the negative die from it, and that is your result on the die roll.
Anywhere between a positive and negative 5. Now, there are also, in this game, exploding 6s.
Yeah.
So if you roll a 6, you roll that die again and add it further. So instead of just being positive 5 to negative 5, technically it's positive infinity to negative infinity. That just won't come up.
Yeah.
If you roll doubles, you usually get a 0 unless you roll double 6s. In which case, something crazy happens.
Yeah.
Now, it's just DM described.
And if you succeed or fail with the success dice or the fail dice being a 6, it's also generally something weird or good happens.
Yes.
So the roll from that is then added on to your stat plus skill.
Yes.
So if I've got, you know, say 7 ranks in guns, mm-hmm. and my dexterity is going to be a 5, then I'm going to have a 12, and then I add or subtract whatever my result was, and I'm looking to beat a difficulty.
Yeah, and there's a list of difficulties, and just like in every other one of these games, there's a table that's like easy, kind of easy, kind of hard, sort of difficult. It's more well-written than some of the other ones we've read. We've read some where it's straight up just a list of synonyms for hard.
Yeah.
Just like difficult. Challenging.
Great.
Troublesome.
So the one in this, you'll generally have like a 10 or 15 is usually the difficulty you'll see. 10 is sort of an average difficulty. 15 is mildly difficult.
And then there are going to be static and dynamic difficulties. Like, for example, just I want to jump over that chasm. That's a static difficulty. I want to shoot that guy. That's a dynamic difficulty because you're going to be rolling against his defense.
Yeah.
And he can modify his defense by taking an active defense.
So with the way that this works, it means most of the time you'll just roll the 2d6, get your number real quick. Maybe you'll have to do some exploding shenanigans. But pretty much it's just roll 2d6 and then go from there.
So there you go. That's the basic die mechanic. It's sort of neat. I'm not really sure about the bell curve functionality of rolling a positive to negative 5 as opposed to just rolling a d10. It's all rolled up in the whole part about the sixes and the possibility of rolling doubles. So mm-hmm. all that stuff really kind of adds to an interesting kind of arcane dice math system that works pretty well with just d6s.
Yep.
So there you go. We could probably talk about how guns deal damage and certain arcana wave devices and so on, but you know what? We don't have time. The basics of this game are that it's sort of neat and fun and fast.
Yeah, you'll almost assuredly, depending on whatever you pick, have one thing that you are super awesome at, and the book goes, yeah, you're going to have a guy who, even if he gets a negative 5 on his roll, is probably still going to succeed anyway because he's got like an 18 in whatever stat.
Yeah, so as long as you're sticking to what you're good at, you're going to be able to keep describing a cool character. This game also has a fairly robust stunt mechanic system.
Yeah, it definitely wants you to stunt.
Yeah.
You do have to beat a difficulty for it, but then you get to do cool stuff.
Yeah, and it's always things like, oh, I shoot a bullet down the barrel of his gun, and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's neat. It's got some very strong impetus to suggest that your players have a good time and describe crazy shit.
And it has just two types of NPCs. You've got unnamed characters, which are sort of like minions from 4th edition in that they are
mooks,
either alive
yeah.
or dead, yeah. and that is it.
Yeah, they're mooks in any other game. They're just easy to kill.
Yeah, and then you've got named characters, and those are villains that probably have basically like PC-level stats.
That's correct, yeah. So, okay, we want to get into the best and worst?
Sure, let's do it.
All right, John, what would you say is your favorite thing about feng shui?
I'm going to say the archetypes that you pick from for your classes are my favorite thing.
Okay.
Because it very much makes you be whatever the thing is.
Mm-hmm.
You might have a lot of skills in this, and there actually aren't that many. There's like 22, which is fairly light as far as skills go.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to have maybe like 5 skills that you know.
Yeah.
And so instead of having to worry about like, oh, well, do I want to put points in whatever? Do I want to do this? You just have a character pretty much pre-made for you. You might have 2 or 3 stat points to screw around with, and you have to pick a couple shticks. But even then, listed underneath it, it says, these are the shticks you should probably pick to be in theme for your character.
The quick pick shticks, which, by the way, was a great name.
Yeah.
Fun to say.
So that, I think, was really well done. When you make a character, you pick one of these things, and you end up feeling like a badass at something. Because you always have like an insanely high stat or skill or both in one thing.
Yeah.
So you're like, oh, I picked, you know, sorcerer, and holy shit, my magic is 8, and my skill in casting spells is like a 7. Oh my god, I'm super amazing at this.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm terrible at basically anything else, but I'm amazing at the one thing that I do.
Right. It's really fun that way. I'm going to say the shtick system is probably... I'm going to go with a mixed blessing here. I think the shtick system is going to end up being my favorite and my least favorite thing.
All right.
And I'll explain why as we get to least favorite. But I really like the breadth of what the shticks are and what they can do. There are so many of them, and they're so well defined and divided between the various types of powers that it's real easy to kind of get a gauge of how you'd like to build your character and push forward. I think that's really interesting. I think that there are a lot, especially in Gun Fu and Kung Fu, which we didn't even talk about the Kung Fu shticks, they're all done in that kind of exalted charm tree structure.
Yeah, you have prerequisites that you have to get this power to get this power to get this power.
And a lot of them are super cool, and a lot of them are very evocative of cool Kung Fu styles. Like, there's a whole Drunken Master tree. I thought those were awesome. Really neat to kind of buy your way down a tree and develop your breath and be a cool Kung Fu master. So that's going to be my favorite thing.
Okay.
What would you say is your least favorite thing about feng shui?
So my least favorite thing in this book, I'll just go ahead and take the things that we talked about before. It's action economy. Having a stat in your game that is more important than anything else
mm-hmm.
is terrible.
Yeah.
And, like, you can argue that fortune is super important just because it lets you get that extra D6, which just gives you a huge bonus over what you would normally have, because then it's only... 2d6 minus 1d6 instead of the level playing field. So it's super good. It lets you do that, but reflexes as a stat block controls everything you want to do that is good. And like I was saying before, no matter what character you are, even if you're like, oh, I picked the brute and I'm the big bruiser archetype and I walk around with like a cudgel and, you know, a flat cap on and I'm just walking
playing
around.
As goon.
Yeah, I've got suspenders and a wife beater, and that's all I'm doing.
No pupils.
And you pick that, but even then, if it goes, oh, you've got like a body of 7, and you're super tough. Okay, yeah, but then I have 3 points to put into any of my other stats? Great, that's all going into reflexes.
Yeah, that's kind of a shame.
Yeah, so that was the one thing. The action economy and to hit all being one stat block, not the best.
Yeah, true.
So your least favorite thing in the shticks?
So I mentioned that it's going to be the shticks, and one of the things we didn't really talk about is that most of the shticks in this game, outside of like, I think it's pretty much all of them, you can just buy them over and over again. And every time you do, it's a flat static bonus to how good you are at that shtick. So for example, do you have guns blazing so that you can shoot faster than normal? You can buy guns blazing 3 times, and then you're really good at shooting faster than normal. And to me... that feels like every time you get, oh, I'm like, finally, I have enough XP to buy another shtick. And the way that purchasing them works is your cost is 8 plus the number of shticks you'd have after you buy the new one. So every time you buy another shtick, it gets more expensive to buy more. And I look at these long, interesting chains of martial arts sticks, for example. I'm like, oh, man, look at that one at the end where I can, like, summon lightning from the sky and smack a guy with it. But in order to remain competent at hitting people at the same speed that other people in my party do, I don't get to buy my way down that tree. I have to buy that first one, Turtle Strikes Hard, like 10 times. And to me, I'm like, why?
Well, that doesn't work that way.
A lot of them do. That one may not, but a lot of them do work that way. You need to buy them over and over again.
No, mostly the ones for shooting guns or swinging a sword or whatever have a thing where it's like, what does this do? Oh, it adds plus one to your speed with this.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm just going to keep adding plus one to speed because, you know, action economy.
Yeah.
But things like the kung fu or spells are straight up just you buy this once and it gives you a cool power.
You can buy the spell ones more than once. Blast in particular, you can buy more than once.
Is the only one you can buy more than once.
But if you have blast, you need to keep upgrading your blast because at the same time that you're not doing that, the gun guy is getting better and better with his guns.
Except there is no upgrading your blast. Well, it's just a different shtick. So it's, oh, now I can shoot acid and fire, but it doesn't make your fire better by buying it again.
I could have sworn it also worked in your ranks in blast for damage calculation.
Nope, it's just ranks in magic and your magic skill.
All right,
so
very
you
good.
Don't need to do that.
Yeah. Anyway, I would just like to be able to purchase each feat once and move forward to kind of broaden my character.
Well, you could. Don't be a gun guy, because gun guys are going to buy the same feat four
times.
They
end up having to do it. And it's kind of like how I don't like the magic item treadmill in D&D games, where it's like, well, what's better, a flaming sword or a flaming sword plus one or a sword plus two? Well, I have to say sword plus two because I'm 5% more likely to hit.
Yep.
And I don't like that sort of thing when that crops up. When the choice is raw numerical accuracy increasing or fun.
And that was the problem I had with the shtick specifically for the melee or ranged fighters.
Yeah.
Is theirs were all just like plus one to your speed, plus one to the difficult or minus one to the difficulty of hitting multiple characters or whatever. So it was just like numerically you got better or worse at using your weapon.
Yeah.
Whereas things like the kung fu and magic were, oh, dude, you unlock an entire new thing that you wouldn't have been able to do before.
Yes.
It's like, oh, you can punch a guy and like turn his hand into a knife. You're like, wow, that's weird.
Yeah, there's all kinds of fun stuff. And I feel like there should never be a system where you have to choose between raw power upgrading and interesting stuff.
Yeah.
It should always be either power upgrading should always just take care of itself, basically.
Mm-hmm.
The treadmill should just be powered. It should just be going. You don't need to be on it. Your character is always as accurate as he needs to be, and that's fine. Because otherwise, it's a trap. If you're like, oh, I spent all my XP on all this cool stuff I can do, but I never hit anyone.
Well, yeah, there's one of the paths, specifically in Kung Fu, has a bunch of these really interesting, cool effects you can do, but none of them are particularly good at, like, say, doing a fight. So
yeah.
Out of combat, you're like, oh, I can, like, punch a statue and I can turn it into rubble, or I can, like, punch a vase and it turns back into a full vase from broken pieces. You know, weird, like, I can mess with the environment stuff,
mm-hmm.
Which, sure, you can punch a wall and come in like the Kool-Aid Man. Good job.
But, it's a good second martial art is what it is.
Yeah, but it means I just spent, like, you know, 72 XP on doing that. And the other guy spent 72 XP and just raised his reflexes by 2 points, and now he's better.
Yeah, so that was a bummer. But not that much of a bummer, because ultimately, John, would you play Feng Shui?
I would play the hell out of Feng Shui. Like, I know they have a second edition, and I'd love to see what they change in that.
Mm-hmm.
Because baseline, the regular Feng Shui is so cool, but these little glaring problems that I feel like in a second edition, if they really addressed that,
mm-hmm.
I would be 100% on board.
I feel like the errors in this game are so minor, and the only reason I notice them is because the game's so awesome.
Yeah.
It's like there are things I would not notice in a worse game.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's, all right, here's a full, like, normal, perfect sheet of glass, and then there's one little imperfection. You're like, oh, look at that imperfection.
It's the first thing you notice, yeah. Where if someone shows you a sheet of roughed up broken glass, you're not like, oh, look, at some point this got hit with a BB.
Yeah, you don't care.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, that's just messed up.
Yeah. So, ultimately, I'm going to agree. I would totally play this game. This seems like right up my alley type gaming. I would look forward to playing this at my earliest convenience. So, yeah, it's going to be a System Mastery double recommend for Feng Shui.
Yeah. Hell, I might even just start running this game. I loved this.
Yeah, you're really looking forward to it. Nice thing about this one is that we have two copies, too.
Yeah.
This is a rare thing for us where we could both read the books at the same time. Hell, John read his copy in Ireland.
Yes, I was just wandering around Ireland reading a feng shui book and going, I don't want to look at your dumb hills.
So sick of this. It's so picturesque.
God, all this rolling green hills. Yeah.
If I see one more weathered, chapped old friendly face offering me a beer or one more sheep, I am going to barf.
Man, what's with all those sheep being
weathery and chapped?
Weathery and chapped and offering me a beer.
All right, let's get into the final thoughts and stuff on this episode. You got anything else you want to add?
Not really. I would definitely say check this out. Check out Second Edition if you really think that awesome kung fu badassness is cool. You could also very easily turn this into other games. Like we had mentioned Exalted, a lot of the rules are sort of reminiscent of that. And the whole archetypes between things would work. You could definitely run a cool anime game.
Yeah.
You could do a fantasy game, a modern game, whatever.
You know, ultimately, I was saying earlier that my least favorite thing in this game is the raw power increases that some classes feel like they have to do. But if I was staying out of mechanics, I'd say my least favorite thing about this game is the meta plot. I feel like this game didn't even need one.
No.
It would have been, hey, here's cool rules to play rads, action heroes.
They'd instead
like,
of just secret societies fighting in the background.
Eunuch sorcerers and chicken men and so on. I feel like that stuff is strictly unnecessary to what is otherwise just a rad. If I want to set it in ancient China, I'll just do that. I don't really need to see a hopping vampire template. I'm good. You're all set. We're good. Move on. I'll just make him a mook. I'm not worried about it. So I do like that. It's a really cool story they wrote. I just feel like it's almost extraneous to how rad the rules are in this game.
Yeah.
So there you go. We both play this. We both recommend it. And we have been the System Mastery Podcast. As always, you can find us at SystemMasteryPodcast.com, or you can send us your comments, questions, suggestions, and so on at SystemMastery@gmail.com or as System Mastery on Facebook, Twitter, or Reddit. You can find us our new Reddit subreddit at r/SystemMastery. We have set up some subreddit posts there that you can use to give us your afterthought questions, which we desperately need right now, so roll those in.
Yeah, roll them bones.
Keep those coming in our way. As always, you can support us on Patreon, Patreon.com/System Mastery. If you support us at any level, you get our bonus content, which is us making characters in the games that we just reviewed. So we're going to go make some Feng Shui characters right quick, as soon as we're done with this.
Oh, yeah. Of course, you can always rate and review us. That always is super nice. So
iTunes, yeah.
Just go in, give us 5 stars, and say we're real dumb and it's great.
Yeah, just make sure you complain about how much we curse. That's my favorite thing to read.
Yeah, these guys keep talking about wieners, and they say the F word. Oh, my goodness.
All right. So as always, rate and review. Get us those 5-star ratings. The more of those we get, the more people end up seeing the show because of the way the iTunes algorithm works. So that should be just about everything. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you after you have a good week.